I want us to think about something tonight. Complete this statement for me. You are. What are you? What do people know you as? I'm going to pick on Steve. He's a coach and a teacher. We know that. He's an elder in the Lord's church. But what are you? How do people define you? Carmel's in our service. He's a teacher. There. Caleb gets shot at. I mean, he's a sheriff's officer. You know, that's one of those things. Somebody's got to do it. I'm glad it's you because as big as I am, I'm a good target. So I understand now why a lot of those guys are small, so that they're not as good a target. If you turn sideways, you don't have as much chance to get it. But what are you known as? I hope that we all think and we're all known as Christians. And we're all known as the Lord's servants. We're all known as people that do what they say they're supposed to do. But I want us to talk tonight. There was once a king. This king had three daughters. The king had a very rich kingdom. It's very large. One thing that people knew about him was that he was very impatient. On his birthday, he went to his daughters and he asked each of them one question. How much do you love me? Getting behind. You know, that's a pretty big question. You ever been asked how much you love somebody? Have you ever wondered how much somebody loves you? I've always been told actions speak louder than words. Took me a while to grasp that, but I understand. As a boy, my mom and dad told me every day, several times a day, how much they loved me. And I thought, I know that you tell me every day. But until my first child was born, I really didn't know what it meant. Then I understood what they meant when they said, I love you. Could only imagine. I understood more. Then I began to fathom how much God loved us. Because for the first time in my life, I was ready to die for somebody. I was willing to die for somebody. I understood what that love meant. But this king was very patient, impatient. And when he asked that question, he began to get some answers. He called his oldest. She said, I love you more than your kingdom is big. He was really excited because he thought she loved him more than anything else in the world and how great it was because he knew how large his kingdom was and he was excited about that. So then he called in his middle daughter. She had her answer ready. She knew it would make him happy, but she said, Father, I love you more than your kingdom is rich. And he said, wow, she really loves me because I have the richest of kingdoms. Nobody's kingdom is richer than mine, so she truly, truly, truly loves me. And then he called in his youngest daughter. She struggled over her answer. She knew what it wanted to be. She told her dad, I love you more than salt. He was very disappointed. Salt to him was worthless. So to him, his daughter was saying that I have no love for you at all. And something that he was known for, then he ordered her to be killed. Anytime this king seemed to get disappointed in somebody or he wasn't happy with the things that was going on, he ordered them to be killed. So he ordered his daughter to be killed. He really hurt over this and he agonized over this. But he said to himself, I have to be consistent. Because if I don't kill my own, how can I kill somebody else? People in his kingdom begin to talk and they begin to think and they wondered, are you really going to kill your daughter? The chef began to think about this, that prepared his meals, and he was his chef for the longest that he'd ever had one, because most of them were dead, because they would prepare something that he did not like or the way that he liked it, and he would have them killed. So he decided the king needed some encouragement, so he prepared all of his favorites on this day. All of the things that he liked to eat the most. And he brought them in to serve him. And as he began to taste them, they were terrible. They didn't taste as they normally did. They didn't have the flavor and the goodness that he was used to. He left out the salt. The king sent for the cook. Why? Why did you do this? Because you know the results. The cooks before you that did not make me happy, they're dead. And now, because of what you've done, I too am going to have you killed. Because you have made me very, very happy, unhappy with what you've done. The cook asked him if he could speak. And the king gave him that because, again, he was his favorite. He explained to him that while he knew he was taking his life in his own hands, he was hoping to show the king truly how much his youngest daughter loved him. He said, because you said salt was worthless and ordered her to be killed when she said she loved you as much as salt. But now you tell me that the food you ate this evening is worthless because it did not have salt. The king not only forgave the cook, but his daughter, and brought her back home because he saw for the first time in his life as a king, somebody, number one, stood up to him, but number two, they showed him a lesson of life. They showed him how just because he said it, maybe it wasn't the best. Power and perception are dangerous. When people have power and how they perceive things is the way they answer things and they do things, that's a very, very powerful thing. And it's dangerous because most of the time when people have all of those things together, they have one characteristic that they don't have. What is that? They don't listen very well. They don't think about what other people may see. They don't think about what other people may do or how their ideas could be a good idea. That is hard to control. And sometimes you have to be taught those lessons. Please turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 5. We're going to look at a few verses here tonight and discuss that and talk for the next few minutes. And I appreciate your participation and your thoughts as we go through this. Let's read it first, verses 13. Let's read verse 13. You are the salt of the earth. I want to go back to the question, what are you? Who are you? The Bible tells us that we are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. What is he telling us here? What do you see him saying to us here? If we're the salt of the earth and we quit using that ability to make a difference in somebody's life, we're like salt that has lost its flavor. And we're not doing what God has commanded us to do. But what a responsibility when you think about what he's saying. You are the salt of the earth. He didn't say you might be, you could be, or you might not want to be. He did say you are. He was very distinct in that. You are the salt of the earth. But we as Christians, brethren, have an important job in this. We make sure we stay fresh. We use the talents God has given us so that we don't lose it. I think about years ago, how you remember we all used to play church league softball. And I used to could hit the ball a little bit, and I used to could throw it a little bit, and I don't know that I could hit Daniel with one now. Because I hadn't done it in a long time. just don't know if I could. I mean, the body didn't work as good as it used to either. But my grandmother used to say, if you don't use it, you lose it. And I agree with that. Brethren, if we don't use the talent that God has given us, if we don't take it and be the salt of the earth for somebody, we're going to lose that ability. Because we're not practicing it. We're not using it each and every day. Something I think about is, a question I want to ask you tonight is, have you ever eaten food without salt? I remember John and I had long been married, and Pop, her dad, I affectionately call him Pop, had heart failure. It was very bad. And they took him off of salt. Now, he loved it. Something John inherited. I love salt. But we love it on food. But when we went to see them, we had to be prepared because everything that Mom cooked was not salted at all. Now, they had I'm trying to remember the name of that stuff they had. Was it no salt or something like that that you could use, and it didn't have the sodium content, and you could put it on your food, and it made it almost worse than it did without it. I mean, it was just terrible, you know. But if you needed something, that was better than not having anything, I guess. You know, I wanted to slip them little salt packets in my pocket and take it, and when he wasn't looking, salt my food, but I knew that I couldn't do that. Because Pop would have smelled it probably if I'd have done it, or he'd have felt it as I was doing that. And that would not have been fair to him that I was doing that. But for the rest of his life, he got used to it. He didn't have to have salt. He'd eat it how it was fixed. Now, he did like pepper. He would put pepper on it that I couldn't put in my mouth. Okay, he loved pepper. He made up for it with hot stuff, I guess. A bottle of hot sauce lasted him about that long. But he used it because it gave him flavor. But I want you to think about the food and no salt. What a powerful statement again. You are the salt of the earth. And I want us to take a challenge tonight to use that salt. I want us to think about who we are and how do people know us. Brother Melvin used an example in our class that we on our men's retreat that really hit home with me. When you go to the grocery store and you see your favorite cashier and you go through the line, have we ever invited her to church? Have we ever asked her, could we have a Bible study with her? When we go to Walmart, and I know it's somewhere everybody goes, and we go through the line if we ever ask our cashier, you want to go to church with me on Sunday? I guess another question would be, can we ask him that? When we're in line, do we act as Christians should? Or when the line from here to the road and back, do we get so impatient that we don't show our Christianity? But we need to think about who we are and what we can do every day of our lives. Do you have people you work with that you've never approached about coming to church with you? Simple things that we can do to make a difference. Simple things that we can do to help somebody. How important is light to us? Can we live without light? We don't think so. Because we depend on it now. I can remember my grandmother and grandfather talking about them living in a house and they would get ready for bed and my grandmother would finish cleaning up the kitchen by lanterns, or she would have candles that she would light and keep in the kitchen so that she could see. I remember them talking about there'd be floor boards missing out of the house. I could throw a cat through. If y'all ever heard that, I know that was a stretch of the imagination. But I've never had to experience living life without light. Most of the time when we go over the wall and we flip the switch, light comes on. when we get tired of it and get ready to go to bed, we go flip it off. But it's one of those things that we take it for granted, I think, sometimes. But what does light do for us? What is the purpose of light? Helps us to see, doesn't it? Tonight, going home, if we didn't have lights on our car, Caleb, how many wrecks would you work? Because you couldn't see. I was up in Kentucky, and I'd been to a church, and I'm coming through a road I'd never been on before in my life, and there was no street lights. Didn't have any cell service. I guess I was out in the sticks for sure. And I'd been driving for about an hour, and I looked up, and I saw some lights in front of me. I thought, boy, I'm so excited. There is a car in front of me, and I thought I was out there all by myself and over these 6-8 rolling hills. And I went over one of these rolling hills, and there was them lights right in front of me. It was an Amish person in their buggy, but did have lanterns on the back of their buggy so that somebody could see him. Because I promise you, I'd run all over him if he didn't have it, because I would have never seen him in time to stop. Light's very important. I think about the advantages that it gives us, but I also think about last week, as much people without lights when the storm came. Some people still are without lights. Some people will never have lights as they know it in the house they had because it's not there. So they don't have the option of light. Sometimes the counties and the cities will be doing things outside and they're upgrading your electrical hookup and you'll not have light for a little while. But then you do. I remember one year at camp, it hadn't been that long ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I think, and it came a storm. It knocked out our lights. We got about 200 kids and adults in this metal building during the worship service, and it was raining so hard you couldn't hear because of the tin building that we were in. And then the rain stopped, but we still didn't have any lights. For the next hour and a half to 2 hours, we sat in a tin building and we sang. And we sang. And we couldn't look at a book because we didn't have any lights. And I promise you, in the North Georgia Mountains, if lights is off, it's dark. Couldn't see anything. But I've never been so motivated and didn't want the lights to come back on because of the beauty that we had. But again, the lights came back on because we needed those lights to make sure those kids were safe and to get them to the places that they needed to go. Let's continue reading verse 14. You are the light of the world. There's that word again. You and are. It didn't say you wanted to be. It didn't say you could be. If you wanted to be, you could pass it off to somebody else. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill that cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. You know, again, the Bible tells us there we are. Brethren, is our switch on? When we walk down through our daily lives and we go to work or we go to some other place, and we do it, is our light on? Does people know that we're Christians by the way we're carrying ourselves? Do they see that happiness that we have as God's creatures, of His children, that our light shining each and every day? We all reach challenges. We all have things that really, really, really put us in a bind sometimes. Until we go to our Father in prayer and realize that His light's a whole lot brighter than ours. He's going to take care of us. No matter what we do, He is always going to take care of us. I want us to think about something. What does our house look like? When people drive by, is it lit up? Or is the lights always off? My lights was off for a while, but thankful to David, they're back on. There were some of them just didn't work. Now they do. But what about our Christian life? Again, is it on every day? Or is it like the little song says and like we just read, have we got it under a bushel so nobody can see what we're doing? Are we afraid to see, let people see what we're doing? Or are we afraid to use the talent God's given us? We can't be afraid. We can't not use what God gave us. And we all have different talents. Not everybody has the same talent. That's for sure. One of mine's eating. And there's a lot of you that don't have as good a talent as I do. I can tell by looking at you. Other people have talents that I can't imagine. Other people have talents that I want to work on so that I'll be better at that. That I can work to be the better person. But I want us to think about what our house looks like. You ever drove down the interstate and it's dark because you're out in the middle of nowhere? And all of a sudden you see a glow in the distance. Maybe that's where a town would be. Or maybe that's the next exit coming up. They've got some lights at the beginning of that exit, so if you need to get off, you can see. A friend of mine and I drove to Reno, Nevada one time. And from Denver, Colorado to there, I'm just going to tell you something. There ain't no lights. There ain't no towns, but every 250 miles, and there's a gas station. And you better stop whether you need gas or not, because there's not going to be another one 250 miles. So you see that glow, you stop and fill up. We were coming home, and it began to snow, and out there when they get really bad at certain sections of these roads, they have bars that they close. And if they close those bars, you got to turn around and go back to the nearest town. Well, I'm telling you, we was trying to get past that bar because there wasn't nothing we could see. There was no lights. And we knew that a two-lane road was going to be worse than the four-lane road we was on. We didn't stop at the 250-mile fuel stop. We made it through the gap, and we said, man, we have made it. We're going home until we looked at the fuel gauge. This fat boy was scared to death. I could imagine I was going to freeze to death. There wouldn't nobody find me for 2 or 3 days. And I began to pray. If you will please let me find a fuel stop, I won't do this no more. I was really crazy. And I'll never forget, we topped a hill and there was a small glow on the side of the interstate, or on the four lane. And we pulled in and it was a two-pump gas station. What two-pump gas station has diesel fuel? They did. One pump was for diesel fuel. And we got to make it home. But that light was the best thing I'd seen in a long time because it was the light that was going to get me home. Are we being a light today that will get somebody home? It's very important we think about. It also tells us that we're a city that's set on a hill whose light cannot be hid. Are there people in your life that remind you of that city? Oh, I think of some. Brother Bill Sanders was a light that sat on that hill for me. Because he always smiled. He always had something encouraging to say. He might sneak up on you when you're sitting there and touch you on the shoulder and want a card, might scare you half to death. But he was a light to everybody that he knew. But who do you know in your life today that's that light, that city that sets on a hill that gives you the encouragement that you need to make it through the day? Are we the light that is set on a hill for somebody else that might do that? It's very important, brethren, that we think about these things. It's very important, brethren, that we not only think about it, but we are somebody's salt. We are somebody's city. We are somebody's light that makes a difference. Brother Melvin used another example that I'm just going to use part of this something I'd never thought about, and it makes me think. Everybody knows the story of the Titanic, greatest ship that's ever built, would never sink. The people that built the ship believed in it so much they built only lifeboats for 1,300 people instead of 2,700 that the boat would hold. When it left, it had 2,700 people on it. As it traveled, the boat that would never sink hit an iceberg, and all of a sudden, the boat that would not sink had a 300-foot gash in the side of it. That's a long way. The builders of the ship was on it, and they determined that, yes, it would sink. They determined that it would sink in an hour and a half. And it took them an hour before they sent out the first distress call. Well, I don't know. I'm from Lyman. I'm a little slower than most folks, but if it's going to sink an hour and a half, you take an hour, that leaves 30 minutes to get somebody there. And they sent out a message, and a boat answered and was on its way. But as they started lowering lifeboats down into the water, the first one that left would hold 65 souls, as they call it when you're on a ship. There was only 23 in that boat. One left with five. One left with one. And of the people, the 2,700 people, with what the other ship got and was in the lifeboats, 705 souls was all that was saved out of 2,700. Several things I see there. Number one, the plan of action. Cromwell, there couldn't have been a plan of action. I mean, to let a lifeboat leave with one, five, even 23. If it had held 65, it would have probably held 75. But a lot of people died that day because of the belief that that ship would never sink. And brethren, a question that I'm asking you, are the salt of the earth, are you the salt of somebody? Are you one of those people that are the light that is shining for somebody? Or maybe you a lifeboat. You're somebody's lifeboat that you reach out to and you bring them in. Because whether we like to think it or not, there's a lot of people in our society today that's drowning. Each and every day, and they just don't even know it. It could be some of our own kin. It could be some of our friends. It could be somebody that's in front of us in the grocery store line. But I want to suggest to us tonight, it's time we turned our light on. It's time that we lit up every day. And we get up every morning, we got some choices to make. Go back to bed or make the best of the day that we have in front of us. And if we go back to bed, we surely don't have an opportunity to shine our light or be a city that's set on a hill. But if we go out in that world every day, we have that opportunity to make a difference. We have that opportunity to be a bright spot for somebody and make a difference. And I pray that we will do that. We have a lot of opportunities at Dalrata Church to make a difference in people's lives. Brother John and I were talking about it before church. There's 50, 60 people that work every day right over here in our warehouse and work a while because of opportunities we have to make a difference in somebody's life, to make a light. We ain't got to teach anybody. We ain't got to do anything. We just got to be able to sit and fold clothes or separate boxes or do something. We have opportunities to be a light and make a difference in somebody's lives that we might not ever get to see. But we have that opportunity to make a difference in somebody's life. We have so many other opportunities here. Something I know nothing about, but I know that we make teddy bears. You don't want me sewing one of them because it'd come apart before we got it to wherever it was going. But we need people that can help in ministries that this church has, and we need to get that list. We need to look at it and see where our light can shine. The elders have provided us with lots and lots of great opportunities to serve. What are we going to do with it? Are we going to turn the light on? Or we're going to put a basket over our light so nobody can see it. That's a choice we have to make every day. I thank you for your time.